This is Mary Bishop, and it is October 12th, 2006. And William Perry is being interviewed at the Gainsborough Library. Mr. Perry, where and when were you born?
I was born in Parrishburg, Virginia, on December the 23rd, 1920.
And how long have you lived in Gainsborough?
Well, the touch of Gainsborough, I've lived for 58 years in this area. I moved to Roanoke in May of 1948, and I've resided at 508 Roosevelt Avenue all those years.
Tell me something about how you came to live at that address.
I moved to the Roanoke because I met a certain young lady through my brother who had also married her sister. And we started courting, and I decided that what we wanted to do was to get married. And prior to that, I worked at Celanese Corporation at Nares, between Nares and Parrishburg. So I left that position there because we wanted to get married in Roanoke. And I came and I began to work at the VA Medical Center, where I worked for 4 years. Well, I moved in May of 48, and in June 19 of 48, we were married, and that was a happy occasion for me to move from Parrishburg to Roanoke and get married. And we moved to a home there at 508 that my aunt lived. She lived by herself. She was a nurse, and she did practical duty, special duty. So we lived there. She lived with us until she passed at 92. So I've had a wonderful experience living in a neighborhood. My wife and I are the last two in the whole Roosevelt Avenue, there are 8 blocks of Roosevelt Avenue, and we are the last two right now that was there when we moved there some 58 years ago. And we're still young. Did I say that?
Tell me about your parents and your brothers and sisters.
My mother was a homebound. My father worked for Lease and McVitie Tannery Company most of his life. There were three tanneries, one in Parrishburg, one in Salem, and one in Buena Vista. And there were 10 children in our family. And I was the second child. My older brother is deceased. Now there is only six of us left there, two girls and four boys. That's the family. And in my wife's family, there were 13 in her family. There were 9 girls and 4 boys. All of them are deceased except 3 daughters. And my wife is one of those 3.
And tell me about the marriage between your brother and Mrs. Perry's sister.
Well, my brother, his wife, and another lady here in Roanoke, graduate of Addison High School. They went out to Virginia Union and graduated. So he was courting my wife's sister. So I met my wife through them. So that's how we were connected, you know, during that period of time. And, of course, they married in 1946, and they had 8 children. And, of course, my wife always felt like those 8 children were hers, too. So that's been the closest of the family during the many years. And it kind of tied us. We were connected through that area, through that type of program for better years, you know.
And you still have extended family members living nearby, do you not?
Yes. Still here in Roanoke and at Cave. See, my wife lived in Cave Spring. That was her home place out there. I still have nieces and nephews living here in Roanoke. And now, another thing, most all of my brother's children are away from the city, except one. Well, they lived in Salem. They moved to Salem before we moved to Roanoke. They moved to Salem in 1946. We moved to Roanoke in 1948.
And just for the record, I wanted to get your aunt's name because she was probably an important person in Gainesboro.
Well, when I moved to Roanoke in 1948, I had an aunt that I visited a lot. I had other relatives here in the city, but she was a kind of a special aunt. She was a registered nurse. There were not many registered nurse blacks back in those days. And, of course, some of them worked at Borough Hospital, but she did private duty all the time. And she was beginning to get age. But one thing about her, what she would do, if any of her brothers and sisters became ill, she would stop her work and go wait on them. And she came to Parsburg. See, her sister was my grandmother also. There was a tie there. And when my grandmother came here, she would come to Parsburg and wait on her, too, you see. So we just felt something, a closeness there, as well as she had two brothers here in this city that carried mail just like I did during a period of time. Oh. So there was a closeness of family relationship here in the city of Roanoke for me. So I wasn't lost when I moved here.
And what was your aunt's name?
Her name was Annie C. Taylor. And she died at the age of 92. And we looked after her during that period of time after we moved here, you see. I can't remember the date that she died, but she died at the age of 92.
Can you describe your house for us, which was her house too?
My house is a 7-room house. 4 rooms downstairs. Dining room, living room, a kitchen, and what I call, it used to be a bedroom, it's my den now. There are 3 bedrooms upstairs. One thing about it house, it's a house that has the boards on it. It's not brick house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a complete basement. The houses on that street, there's a lot of houses in this area, I'm sure, they didn't have a full basement. We didn't have a full basement, but I dug out a basement enough to have washrooms and things down there and be able to put a little shop down there. But that's been it. And we have worked on it over the years and, you know, updated it and everything. Because back then, we had a stove in the dining room where we got a heat pump. So after we had to do a whole lot of remodeling, you know, and put in a furnace and wash machines and different things in the basement, you know. So we remodeled a lot during the year.
You have any idea when it was built?
Well, if we've been there 58 years, I think that house probably, I'm just going to make a guess, somewhere approximately 80 or 90 years ago, mm-hmm. when the neighborhood was developed back in those days, you see. A lot of the neighborhoods were developed back then. And another factor about that, you have to understand what happened here. In this area, in the Gainesboro area, am I talking too far ahead of you?
No,
okay.
That's fine.
Well, by carrying mail, I learned a lot about the Gainesboro. You see, back then, they used numbers. Gilmer Avenue was 4th Avenue. Patton Avenue was 5th Avenue. Harrison Avenue was 6th Avenue. Rutherford Avenue was 7th Avenue. Madison Avenue was 8th Avenue. But when you cross, you see, this is the Northwest. When you cross Jefferson Street, as I told you before, things kind of changed. But you had approximately the same numbers down in Northeast. They went by 9th Avenue and 10th Avenue. And then you had an East Avenue in Northeast that kind of changed everything a little bit. But Rufford Avenue in Northwest, the same as Rufford Avenue in Northeast. So that's the way the city was scheduled or made up.
In those days, were they numbered, the streets, like, was Rutherford Avenue called both 7th Avenue and Rutherford, or did it just
change? No, it was all 7th Avenue. But see, the post office, when they came in, that was confusing to the mail carrier. If you didn't kind of live around, it was, of course, you had the same numbers. Harrison Avenue, same numbers as Harrison Avenue. So they decided that what they would do, they would change and get rid of the numbers, and then they would come back. I think they reused some, like Rutherford Avenue, but after that, they stopped using Rutherford Avenue. And when it brought out the telephone directors, then everything was back. They changed everything to Madison Avenue, Gilman Avenue, Wells Avenue, just like over here. What's over here now? Wells Avenue was 3rd Avenue, I believe, but it's Wells Avenue now, you know. But everything changed. That's the neighborhood. This area changed a great deal back then.
Back to your house. Out in the yard, did you have a garden? Or
never had a garden. Didn't have room for one. Kind of had a little garden out to my wife's father's house. But I had a special garden, and my special garden was down on the market. I went to the market all the time.
Oh.
And that was a big thing back then.
Uh-huh.
You could ride the bus for 7 cents, 10 cents. So everybody went to the market. My aunt went to the market. That was a big thing. I was just tickled to death over there when I moved here to go to the market to get my vegetables. Okay, I better stop talking then. Go ahead.
Tell me about the kind of work that your family did.
Well, my mother didn't work at all. My father worked for Leeson McVitie Tannery Company. And they had one in Parrishburg. They had one in Salem. And they had one in Buena Vista. When you talk about Leeson McVitie Tannery Company, what they did, they processed leather. Cow hides would come in, and they carry the cow hides to the plane. And of course, they had boards where they would scrape the hair off the hide. And then what they would do, they'd put the hide in a vat, and then they would be able to work it around. And back then, what they would do, they would bring bark off the tree, and they'd take that bark down, and that would color the hides. Now, what my father, as they would dry, they would hang up in a loft, and they would dry out. And my father had a little gauge. He would pull them down, and that's what he would do. He would gauge them and sort them, and then they would ship it out to the companies that would...
The gauge, was that on the thickness?
The thickness. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he was able to observe and separate the hairs in categories, you see. Mm-hmm. That was a very important job to be able to do that work, you know. So he did that the most of his lifetime, while he worked there until he died. But a lot of people work there. Of course, that's no longer a company now, because this synthetic rubber and everything came in, so it made a difference. Go ahead.
I want to be sure to allow a lot of time to talk about your many board memberships, because you have been on so many. I don't know whether we should do that now, or is that okay?
It's okay.
If you would just start talking about that, because you are one of the most...
Well, you know, it's strange, and it's fiction, I guess. When I got involved in the Boy Scouts over to the First Baptist Church, and I began to do training, I was a training chairman for a period of time, I began to meet people. You see, you know people. And I got involved in that program a great deal. And then people would, from that point of view, then I got involved in the scouting program. And then I got involved in the scouting program in my church for a long period of time. And then people began to know you. Then they would invite me to serve on boards. And there was a fellow who was an insurance agency. He recommended me to serve on the United Way board. That was my first board in this city, United Way. And I served on that board for a number of years. But I not only served on the board, but I did a lot of extra work in their campaign and everything. And then you got to know other people, just like Red Cross. People got to know. I said, well, let's bring in Lou Perry. Here we get Lou Perry on our board.
That first board membership with United Way, you remember, have any idea when that was?
Oh, it was back early 50s. Yeah. Well, maybe about 58 or somewhere along in that neighborhood. I started working, serving them. And then I got in tied. You see, the old Y was right here on the corner. And I got involved in that. And I served on that board for 40 years. And then what happened then, that when we merged, then I served on a corporate board 6 years. And then I got involved with the Council of Community Service. I served on their board, served my time out on that board. And then I got involved with the Red Cross board and served on that board. And then I got involved in the Corporate Extension board. I served on that board. And the other boards, I served on a lot of boards. One time they accused me that I served on more boards individually than anybody else. But I spent a lot of time on those boards and working on the board because I enjoyed doing that. Because, you see, I never had an opportunity. You see, when opportunity knocks, you have to take advantage of it. Now, in my hometown, I never had an opportunity to do that. So when I moved here to Roanoke and people began to know Lou Perry, well, they say, well, let's get him involved. So that's how I became involved into so many boards here in the city. And I really enjoyed it. And then something else happened that a lot of people don't know about. In working with United Way, I had a good white friend at United Way, and we became close friends. He also worked in scouting, and one day he said to me, Lou, would you like to be a member of the Lions Club? And I thought a little bit about that. I said, yeah, I'd like to be, but I've never been asked. He says, I'm thinking about organizing a Lions Club. I said, you are? He said, yeah. I said, you better tell me about it. He says, what I'm thinking about organizing an integrated Lions Club. I said, well, I'll tell you what you should do. I don't want you to be embarrassed, and I don't want to be embarrassed. You check with the governor to see if you get permission to do it. And you have to have a club that sponsored you also. So he did. So the governor told him, you go ahead and set it up. Well, what he did, he recruited white, and I recruited black. And that was the first integrated Lions Club in Virginia. 30 years, we're going to celebrate our 30th anniversary next year.
What's the name of it?
The Roanoke Valley Breakfast Lions Club. But it worked just wonderful. But something else happened. You see, women were not members of Lions Club. Women were lioness. Now, my wife was a lioness back then. Well, what really happened was the National opened up the door and said, we're going to bring women into the Lions Club. We were the first club to bring a female into our club. So we were making history all the time. Of course, we lost her. She worked for the city. She died. But right now, we have just as many women in our club, and they have been really wonderful. But now there are still some clubs that want to bring women in. So I thought I'd let you in on that. But we did that here in the city of Roanoke, and it worked out beautifully. And we've had a good time, because that's a good club. Lions Club is really a good club. Okay.
I want to back up and talk about your school life.
Okay.
And then I want to talk about your work life.
Well, in Parrishburg, where I came from, we finally ended up having a junior high school. That went to the 10th grade. Now, in order to acquire a high school education, we all blacks had to leave Parrishburg because we could not go to school there at the White High School. So Christiansburg Industrial Institute by the Quakers had put there, they had dormitories for boys and girls. So about 5 members of my family attended Christiansburg, and all we had to do was go there. We had such a good school at Parrishburg. We only had to go 1 year at Christiansburg, then we were able to graduate. Now, when I moved here, I had a brother and a sister who came here and lived with us and went to Aston. But a lot of students, a lot of boys and girls, if you either had to come to Addison or Salem, if you could get live with somebody in Salem or in Roanoke, or go to Bluefield if you wanted to get a high school education. So that was back in those days. Of course, when integration came on, everything changed, and the concept of everything changed, so that worked out. Now, when you talk about education, the early part of my family, now, I have a sister who has a master's degree in music. I have a brother who has his master's degree, who has taught around in this area, finished up his schooling in Florida, and he's retired. He comes in and out here. I think he kind of lives here in this library, but he is a great reader. He loves to read. And I had another brother who had his master's degree in Germany and in English, who taught in Howard, but he didn't get his doctorate degree because he died at 47. And then I had a sister who went to college. She didn't stay there. She went along with them. And then another brother who went to college in music. So after the family began to move along, a lot of them, we got involved in education. And we who were older than they, we helped them. That's how we were able to do. Because my father didn't make a whole lot of money. So what we did, we would pool our resources and help them to get through college, you know. So that worked out beautifully for them, you know. And that was my educational background. Yeah.
Tell me about your work. When your first jobs and then your first work with the Postal Service.
Let me go back a little bit to tell you about my first job. When I graduated from high school in 1938, I couldn't find any work. I tried to obtain work at my father's tannery, where he worked. But I never could get there. I never could get a job. I finally ended up, a good friend of my father, who worked for Norfolk and West on the rail gang, he came in one weekend and asked my father and mother to let me go back with him. Because he had a position, a job for me there on the rail gang. You know, you travel, we loaded the car. So I went back with him, and my job was a special job. I worked in the kitchen. And I laughed about that over the years when I did some work for the Postal Service. I said, you know what my salary was? They said, what? My salary was $30 a month, room and board. And they couldn't believe it. But that's how I started out. But I never stayed out there too long because I went and came on back home and I worked for Norfolk West and out on the rail gang for a little while. But then I went for Celanese Corporation there between Harris and Persper. Similar to this place that closed down here, you know. They was yarn back then, but they still stopped. So I worked there prior to the war, prior to my service. In 1943, I went into the Navy. I don't think I told you that.
No.
I went into the Navy in 1943. I stayed in the Navy 33 months, and then the war was over. Then I came back from the Navy, and I went back to my job. They're selling these, and I stayed there to 1948. But my work at Celanese, you see, you have to understand what people go through with. And I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't have any problem growing up as a youngster in Parrishburg. All of us, white and black, we played softball together, football together, you know, had a lot of fun together. We didn't talk a lot about race and everything like that, you know. We just had a good time. Although I couldn't, when I went to Celanese, I really couldn't get a good job. Now, I was a janitor when I started working there. And when I used to do that work for the Postal Service, employment for supervisor responsibility, I used to tell them when I came back from service, I received a promotion. And they said, oh, Mr. Pierre, what was your promotion? I said, I was promoted to just an ordinary employee. I never was able to move up. I tried to move up, but I was never able to move up. So I accepted and went on. So I was happy. I had a dream that one day that I was going to live here in Roanoke, and one day I was going to carry mail in this city, and I never lost that dream. And what happened, a fella gave me a little paper on examination, and I studied that, and I was able to pass examination. So that's how things happened for me over the years.
Tell me about, again, about your career with the Postal Service.
Well, I carried mail 18 years. For 4 years, I carried mail all over the city. I was just a substitute carrier. I worked by the hour. When I left the VA, I had a regular position. And the postmaster here told me, it was a lady, said, Mr. Pierre, you know what you're doing? I said, what do you mean? You're leaving a regular position to come here to work in a part-time position, and you're going to work by the hour until you move up to become regular. I said, I'm aware of that. I said, but I tell you what, I want to work with the Postal Service. So she says, okay, then she hired me. And I worked that position. I worked as a carrier for 18 years as a carrier, strictly a carrier. Well, things began to change. That was a post office department. You got to know how times changes things. It was a post office department back then. Well, for 1965 to 1970, I still carried mail, but I was an ad hoc hearing officer, investigating officer for adverse action. And what they did, employees who had trouble or suspension or whatever would do, or they would get rid of them or whatever it was, I would go out and conduct a hearing. And what I would have to do, I had to tape it. I'd come back to the office and sit down and write it up. I had to write up the case. I had to write a summary, I had to write the findings of facts, and I had to make a decision. What would happen to that employee? And that was real challenging. I did that to 1970, then demolished that job and brought in the affirmative action program. Well, they kind of knew me in Washington to a certain extent by working up there with the ad hoc. And I traveled a lot all over Virginia, Washington, Baltimore with those adherent officer. So then I went out, they opened up a new program. They call it the U.S. Postal Service. See how they changed? Post Office Department to the U.S. Postal Service. And then they brought in what they call the Affirmative Action Program. So then they decided that employees who filed discrimination complaints, regardless of race, creed, color, national origin, whatever it was, they would send me in. If they filed a complaint and requested hearing, requested counseling, then what I would do, I would put out my mail bag and tell the postmaster I had a request to go counsel somebody. And I would go in and listen to their complaint, and then I'd, both sides, postmaster side or his officer side, and then I would come back and write up the case. But I had to give them an opportunity. I couldn't tell them they didn't have any complaint. I had to just write the facts, find in the facts, and let them do what they wanted to do if they weren't satisfied with the results of mine. And then one day they said they wanted to have also place EEO specialists in the position. In Virginia, we had two district offices, one in Richmond, one here in Roanoke. So I moved out of the post office to the district office, and I worked under the district manager, and that's who I worked for until I retired or they abolished my position. But then I'd put together all those reports and things and send them in. And what happened, I would have to send them in on the EEO program. I'd have to write up my reports and send my reports in to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And they would review them, and then they would take them from there. And then on three occasions, I had to go to those offices and work a 90-month, 93-month detail. So I gained a lot of experience working in the EEL program, but it's no longer the program that it used to be. But it was a good program for the employees who felt that they were discriminated against. I found a lot of things that needed to be changed, you know, and so we did a lot of good work with that area.
I was wondering what you learned about the working lives of people here in Roanoke from that all those years of work.
I learned, well, I tell you, I learned a lot of things about that work. In my position as an EEO counselor or EEO specialist, in my district, if somebody raised a complaint of discrimination, for example, if you took the examination and you got your grade and everything, and they were hired and hadn't called you, and you called, found out that Lewis Perry is the EEO counselor, you'd call and you'd say, well, what I'd like to do, I'd like to, Mr. Perry, I'd like to have an interview with you, and I'd like to file a complaint. And you'd come in and tell me, say, you know, here's my grade. You bring your grade. They're hiring. What about my grade? I had the authority in my position. All I had to do was call the scheme man, bring your report in here. I want to see your hiring practices. When that came aboard, the post office, postmaster had to be awful careful, because I could just go in and ask for the records. And they couldn't deny me for giving me the record. Mm-hmm. And then that's one thing that would help change things back in those days. And when I started working at the post office, when a female working on a workroom floor, but time began to change things. Everything began to change. We got to be careful. But then you had to go back and look at if you were a 10-point service-connected veteran, they couldn't bypass you regardless of your score to bring somebody in that had was not a 10-point veteran, you see. So I learned a lot about the makeup and what you had to do and what they had to do in order that they'd be honest in their hiring practices. Same way promotions, all that changed over the years, and it made it better for everybody. Now, I would have never had my position, like I told you earlier, if somebody in Washington had to call this post office and told them, we want a black man to come up here for this interview. The postmaster would have never said. That's just, that's facts, you see. Back in those days, you see. Of course, things have changed now, I hope. All right, go ahead. I don't want to take up your whole time. How's your, everything going all right? Okay.
I thought we'd talk a little bit about your home life on Rutherford Avenue. You know, over the years, just the things you all did in the evenings and your community life, your neighbors, and...
Well, my wife and I took a lot of interest in our neighbors, you know, and we would help them when they would be able to help them, you know, whatever way we were able to do, because she was community-minded too, you know. And we had a neighborhood group there, Rutherford Avenue Block Club, and we bring the neighbors in together and we talk about what we could do to improve the neighborhood. Same way here. Oh, there was one more thing I forgot to tell you. While it flipped up, I was part of the Roanoke Neighborhood Partnership for a long time. I forgot about that. I served as its president. That was an excellent program here in the city. So we did a lot of work in the community, both of them, because we were kind of community-minded, you know. Mm-hmm.
So the neighbors were really close on Rutherford.
Yeah. Close. Now, like I told you, we are the last two mm-hmm. in the neighborhood, the whole block that was here when we moved here 58 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Are there still homeowners on that street? Or
that's a problem. We have a lot of rental property now. Most all, so many of the problem. Well, we still have some homeowners, but everything has changed. Everything has changed, and a lot of it is a lot of it people are buying and renting and remodeling and renting it to the people, you know. So it's changed a lot.
You know, back in the old days, were there businesses that you and Mrs. Perry would, you know, favorite businesses in your neighborhood?
Well, We had a lot of stores. Back in those days, the Searns had the store. Now, there was a black family right here on Harrison Avenue that had a store, a grocery store. And there was another store up on the up end of Rutherford Avenue. So and of course, we would go to the Searns were very nice. We didn't have any problems. They had things pretty reasonable. If we didn't want to go downtown, and we didn't have an automobile, you see, we'd go to those stores and patronize those stores. And we got along fine, as far as that was concerned, supporting them. And now all of that's gone. All those stores are gone in the community. Everything changed. See how the community will change.
Did you go use some of the businesses on Henry Street, insurance or whatever, or cleaners?
Yes. Now, Plenty Cleaners was our big cleaners. They was right over here. And then we would, we had a drugstore we patronized, and they had some stores on Henry Street. We had an insurance agent, which we were part of, at barbershops, at shops down here on Gilbert. So there was a lot of businesses over there where you could go to get a meal. And, of course, they had the Dumas Hotel, and they served, kind of served meals. And we had a number of business over and had hotel. Another, I was at another hotel there on the street there too. Dumas Hotel was a big hotel. Now something else came up in mind when you talk about Dumas Hotel. Back in those days, we had a lot of bands that would come to town and play at the Civic Center, and they would stay at Dumas Hotel. They couldn't stay at any other place, but later on, Hale had to open up a place up in Salem. But most of the people, those bands, musical people who came to town, or they had to come to town to stay, they did stay at Dumas Hotel.
Did you ever see any of them or go to hear them?
Yeah, I would go to the Civic Center sometimes. Yeah, like Count Bass, Cap Calloway, or some of them would come to town. And we'd go to them sometime. My wife didn't care about going. But we'd go.
Were they at the City Auditorium?
Yeah, the City Auditorium, right down here. Well, that was Commonwealth. It's no longer Commonwealth Avenue. It was a big Commonwealth down there. And then later on, they built one across the street here, over here. But that's gone now. A fella put up one that they used that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And for music things and activities. You know, things begin to bloom a little bit as the years begin to pass by.
Did you ever go to the Club Morocco or the Ebony Club?
I never did go to that. Now, we had a black theater. But when we went to theater downtown, we had to go in the back off of Kirk Avenue up the stairway, the wrong theater. Mm-hmm. And later on, as the years passed, the theaters opened up, you know. You go to any of them. As time passed, you know, when things began to change, discrimination begin to take off, begin to look at it very carefully, and begin to open up, things begin to open up, you know. Just like Addison High School was the only school you could go to back then, as far as high school. And of course, you could go to two high schools here, Addison and Jefferson. And then they had Carver. Now, where my wife
in Salem.
Lived,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, where my wife lived, those students at Benton went to Carver High School in Salem. You see how things were there back then. But you know, things about it, it's, you just got adjusted to it. You couldn't ride the buses up in front. When you got on a bus, you had to go to the back, same way with the trains and different things. So things were something when you thought about it. When you go downtown to drink water cooler, I tested it up. They had one for black and one for white. I didn't find any difference, but they was different again. Okay.
What were your memories of the Gainsborough Library? Did you know Mrs. Lee?
Well, I knew Mrs. Lee. Mrs. Lee was a wonderful lady. Mrs. Lee was a member of First Baptist Church. And she was a devoted member over here and over to First Baptist Church. She was an excellent Sunday school teacher. And why she taught ladies. And I'll tell you what happened to me. Mrs. Lee gave up that Sunday school class. Superintendent came one Sunday and asked me if I would hold her class till he got somebody to teach. I shook my head. I said, how can I do that? He said, it's just temporarily. That temporarily position lasted 33 years. All women. But I learned a lot and had a wonderful experience. But she was a good teacher, a good librarian, and a good citizen in this community. Just lived up the street here, too.
So yeah. Did you come into the library? Yeah.
Sometime when I carried me out, I always came by here. Got it delivered to me.
Oh.
So I got to see her, you know. But she was a super lady.
Who were some of the community leaders that you admired the most?
Well, there, I thought about that. Well, look to a question. Reverend A.L. James, who pastored this church here for 38 years.
First Baptist, right?
First Baptist Church for 38 years. He was kind of my mentor. I joined that church and went on the official board under his leadership. I thought the world, he did a lot for this city that a lot of people didn't know what he was doing, but he worked with the people across town. He knew how to do that. Dr. Harry T. Penn, who was a dentist, was another one of my mentors. I thought a lot of Harry T. Penn. He did a lot of work in this community in those years. And then Reverend, there's another minister over here at Hill Street that I liked very much.
R.R. Wilkinson?
R.R. Wilkinson. I thought a lot of R.R. Wilkinson. He did a lot of work through the NAACP and for the community. We had another young lawyer, Reuben Lawson. And then we had a doctor, E.D. Downing. So we had some people that were kind of worked hard back in those days for the city, you know. And I just thought a lot of those were some of my mentors in
and
the city.
The things that they did for the city, what do you mean? Were they helping individuals or they?
No, they were helping the city. They were trying to help the city come together,
mm-hmm.
and maybe look at each other and respect each other. And
right.
Maybe job opportunities and different things like that, you know, mm-hmm. because the job opportunities was kind of scarce back then, you see,
mm-hmm.
for minorities in any way, you know. But Norfolk Western was a key factor back then, and the service tracks and things, you know, and a lot of work that they had office down in the big office, you know. So things were moving, began to move a little bit as time passed by, you know.
I was wondering what you remember of the desegregation of the businesses downtown.
Well, I'm going to be very honest with you. When they desegregated, I don't know what it was. I had no problems. I had no problems myself.
You mean before they desegregated?
After they desegregated.
Oh, okay.
I didn't have. Now, before, I knew where I could go and where I couldn't go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's one place I always wanted to go was S&W. Because I thought that was a super place.
That's a cafeteria.
Cafeteria.
Down on
Church Avenue. But I tell you what happened. Time tells you how things change. When we organized our Lions Club, Breakfast Club. That's where we went for our meetings. Now, they had an upstairs. You know, they served upstairs, too, you know. And that's where we would go and have our breakfasts until they closed. No problem. We'd go through the line downstairs, go right upstairs, because a lot of times they didn't have a line upstairs, you know, served upstairs. So that was some of the things that we did. But I didn't have, and of course we shopped downtown and everything with all the stores. Everybody had their special stores. The ladies had their special stores. The men had their special store. So that was a big thing downtown. But Davis's is the only store down there now for men.
Mm-hmm.
All of them are gone. You know. But I didn't have any problem. But I certainly checked that drinking fountain at Crescent's to see if there was a difference in the water. To find any difference.
How has Gainsborough changed?
Well, it's not the same anymore. All the businesses are gone that was once here. Industry is gone. It's gone. But you see, you got to understand it. It served its purpose back in those days. That's the only thing that we had was industry, a place to go and get some food and everything, and go over there if they want to go to the Epic Club, want to go to the theater. We all participated in that, you see. But when desegregation came about, then it changed. Then what happened? We could go where we wanted to. You could go to any of the restaurants. I remember the first time we couldn't go to Hotel Royal. Don't you know, I remember one time I had a good friend who worked in scouting. He gave him the Silver Beauty Award, the highest award in scouting, in 1952. He had to sit in the kitchen over there before they would bring him in to present his award. Now, I got the Silver Beaver Award in 19. Show you how to, in 64, my wife and I went in the Crystal Ballroom. You see how things begin to. You got to look back. I know what it was. Mm-hmm. But then you got to look forward. You see, it's a negative part. But then it's also a positive. I look at both sides of it, the positive part and the negative part. You see, when I was in the Navy, I got on a train here in Roanoke. Oh, I got catching at Parksburg. I had to sit back in the segregated car. When I got to Bluefield, moved anywhere I wanted to. When I came home, I could ride anywhere I wanted to. And I got to Bluefield, then I had to move back. So those things you had to look at and adjust to them. You don't know anything about that, young lady. I'm just talking history, what went on. You see, you never know. If you don't hear anybody talk about it, you never know. Yeah. And the young people that stay, they don't want to hear about that. They don't know, want to know how we, what we really went through in order to survive. If we went somewhere, you had to be careful. If you want to buy gas somewhere, if you want to use a restroom, who was that program that had, that guy was driving Daisy? Did you see that?
Oh, yeah, driving Miss Daisy.
But you know, there was something to that. It was something to that. Now, you'd go to ask somebody, I'm sorry, my restroom was out of order. Sorry? So you had to, it was something to you to have to go. But we survived. Okay, you go back to your question. I get caught up in it and start talking.
Oh, it's wonderful. What are your memories of urban renewal?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you about urban renewal. And a lot of people may not agree with me what I say about urban renewal. I'm going to go back in Northeast for urban renewal. I carried mail down there. There were some good houses in Northeast, but there were some houses that were not good. Now, my thinking, on one side, I thought it was good. A lot of people got good homes when they moved north. You see, back then when I moved here, there were no minorities beyond 10th Street. No minorities. But now they're beyond 10th Street. They moved out of the Northeast and got nice homes. I know some of them suffered. I know that. But it was better. I have talked to some of them, and they said, well, we suffered, but we're living better. Because some of those houses were not so good down there. And I know that. I know that. All that over at Pocahontas Avenue, Gregory Avenue, I know all about, because I carried the veil down and I saw the condition in some of those houses. Now, over here in Northwest, that's beautiful over there. Nice home, but it came, of course they got better, more money than it did down in Northeast. But that's a price you pay, you know, for better living. So I thought it was good. It had its negative parts of it, but it had its pluses, you see. So I thought it was good in one sense. Then back then, you got to look at things. Lincoln Terrace was nice. A lot of the people moved to Lincoln Terrace. But that changed. It's better now. But see, these things change, and then they come back, you see. Mm-hmm. So that's just my concept of the city. And you know what? I love Roanoke. I'm kind of like Noel C. Dale. Okay, go ahead. You get me caught up in this, and I get to talking about it, but that's my concept of it. But not a lot of people agree with my concept of the urban renewal, you know. But you know something else? When I came here, Henry Street was a nice, it was a nice street. My wife told me that they always went, they had to walk. You see, my wife and her father, my father-in-law never had a real job. He did furnaces and things back in those days. He had special families that he worked for. So what he would do, they would get up early in the morning and come in and help him. You see, they had to work. See how those girls, all of them did that. They would help him with his offices and everything early in the morning. Then they'd go on to Addison, see, and go to school or whatever they had to do, you know. So back in those days, that's what would happen to them, you know. They had to work. They were closely knitted, you see. And sometimes they had to stay with the white families in order to go to school in the city.
Hmm.
You see, there's a lot going on back in those days. When you look at the history of what has happened, and of course, Henry Street was there, you know. And that's all we had. And so we had to make up with it, too. But there were some good businesses over and some fine people over there. And Dr. Brooks had a fine drugstore over there. Oh, yeah, on Henry Street. And Green had a shoe shop. And Dr. Downing had his office over there. And they had offices up there, Dr. Brown and Dr. Penn. Oh, they had all of that over there on Henry Street. North Carolina Mutual was out on the corner of Wales Avenue and First Street, you know. And shoe shops and barbershops here, barbershops over here, funeral homes and everything. This was really the heart of the Greensboro as far as the business was concerned, you know, back in those days. Mm-hmm. So you accepted it to the best of your ability and moved along. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, this is so good.
Yeah.
Before I forget, I wanted to make sure that we talked a little bit about your Navy service, where you went and what you did.
I served. I was recruited here in Roanoke, and I prepared to go into the Army. I thought the Army would be wonderful. But I came here to Roanoke, and they took the examination, examined me, and they put on my poor Navy. And I was just disgusted. Also said I would qualify for submarine duty. But once I went in the Navy, I went to Great Lakes, Illinois, and stayed there 6 weeks training, I learned something. And through the years, I stayed in the Navy 33 months. I always said, I wished I could see that doctor who put me in the Navy. I'd give him a big hug because I had a good Navy career. I didn't stay, I was a land Navy. I went to Great Lakes, Illinois for my training, came back home, and I went to Hastings, Nebraska. We opened up a naval depot there. We made ammunition for the fleet. That's what I did. All for 2 years, I stayed right there in Hastings, Nebraska, and went to the naval depot. And something else, too. There were not many minorities in Hastings, Nebraska. We had to go to Omaha, Nebraska for Liberty every other week.
How far?
150 miles. 150 miles. And the buses was kind of like cattle, no heat. And wintertime was really rough, really rough. Well, my time ran out in Hastings, Nebraska, and they sent me to, went to Hawaii. I still work with ammunition in Hawaii there. But I didn't stay there too long until the war was over. But boy, they always called something about going down. You go down to some of the other islands. But I stayed there at Oahu for the rest of our time in the Navy. Then I came back and was discharged on December the 29th up in Tennessee.
So you were in Oahu after Pearl Harbor?
Mm-hmm. I was there after Pearl Harbor. I was there doing Pearl Harbor.
Oh.
Oh, after Pearl Harbor. I wasn't there doing Pearl Harbor, but I went there after Pearl Harbor. But when I went back on vacation, I saw the change in that island, all those hotels and everything. I could hardly find the old Honolulu, but it's still there. Yeah. So I stayed there, about 6-7 months.
I'm glad you went back.
And then I was discharged, yeah. I've been back a couple of times on vacation because I love it. It's really nice. I better not say this on TV, but I got a deeper suntan in there, too. I didn't record that, did it? But I love the water. I love the beach, you know. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I guess we're about done. There's so many more things we would love to talk with you about.
You know, something happened that I want to tell you about. I think I want to tell you about the something about the libraries. I'm going back to my wife. As I told you earlier, my wife did a lot of work here. She would put all over the city. Everybody, all these businesses for the ad for Halka Company, they just really loved her. And she'd travel around and pick up the ads for different places, you know, for Halka Company, because that was the only ad company back then. Well, one day the lady in office sent her across, told her to go to that library across town. And she went across the town to the library and told the lady, she had called and told her what book she wanted. So the lady, she went in to pick up the books. And the lady said to her, "What are you doing coming here, picking up books here? You need to go to Gainsborough Library." But my wife was very disappointed. She just said to her, said, "Well, I'm sorry." I said, "But," she says, "the lady from the office called me, told me to come here to pick up these books. And that's why I'm here." She gave her the books. But when she went back to the office, boy, that lady called her up and told her, "You don't do a thing like that." But she gave a little outing about it, you know. But those things kind of happen sometimes. But that showed you how some people think back that time, back in that time, you know. Mm-hmm. Of course, this was a good library. But they felt like that library is for blacks. So you go to your library and you go across over there. In case of her. So those are some of the things that occurred back in those days. But time changes a lot of things. I'm through. I hope I haven't talked too much.